The activities of Britain's Secret Intelligence Service, the organisation we now know as MI6, have always been shrouded in mystery, and no more so than in its first few decades between 1909 and 1939. Former Secret Service officers who sought to publicise their work were treated like pariahs and pursued through the courts. The prime example being Compton Mackenzie, whose book Greek Memories, still officially banned, was finally published in 2011. There was one major exception to the rule: the activities of Paul Dukes inside Russia in the wake of the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution were publicised by the British government in order to justify its military intervention in northern Russia. We understand that Mr. Dukes, who recently returned to England after a stay of several months at Petrograd and Moscow, has placed at the disposal of the government valuable information upon the situation and outlook in Bolshevist Russia, the Times reported. In some official quarters, it is felt that this information should not be withheld from the public. The issues involved are held to be far too grave to justify final decisions by the government without the support of an accurately informed public opinion. The newspaper subsequently published a series of reports from Dukes on the dire situation inside Russia, where the Bolsheviks had launched the Red Terror, summarily executing thousands of counter-revolutionaries and imprisoning many more. It was not the last time, of course, that the British government would resort to revealing secret intelligence to justify a foreign military escapade, but it was nevertheless remarkable given how important Dukes's mission had been. He was smuggled into Russia to take over the British spy networks from an expatriate British businessman, John Merritt, who had been left in charge when the British Secret Service officers were forced to withdraw in the late summer of 1918. Merritt, surely one of Britain's lost heroes, was something of a Scarlet Pimpernel figure. He not only took charge of the British espionage networks when the embassy withdrew, but also smuggled potential victims of the Red Terror out of Russia along the courier lines. He was on the run from the Cheka, a predecessor of the KGB, when Dukes arrived. Having already encouraged him to describe his role as a British spy inside Russia, where he operated undercover as a member of the Ukrainian Cheka, both the government and the SIS were scarcely in a position to prevent the publication of this book a few years later. Dukes does not disclose his real role inside Russia, but he does mention the main players. He took over the networks from Merritt, referred to here as Mr. Marsh, and then smuggled him out of Russia. Dukes then put his own mistress, Nadezhda Ivanovna Pozdrovskaya, in charge of the networks. Pozdrovskaya was a doctor and former revolutionary who was a personal friend of the Russian leader Vladimir Lenin. Her cover name was Maria Smirnova, and she is referred to here misleadingly as Merritt's housekeeper Maria. Pozdrovskaya was assisted by a journalist, Kurz Gedroitz, named in this book as Dmitry Konstantinovich. Pozdrovskaya did not last long after Dukes left. She was arrested a few months later and sentenced to death, but released in 1922, ironically around the time that Red Dusk was first published. The main two networks, however, lasted until 1927, when the main agents were put on trial in what the British claimed were Stalinist show trials, but were in fact the genuine trials of British spies. The work of Merritt, Dukes, and Pozdrovskaya was therefore extremely productive in maintaining a vital source of secret intelligence for SIS. Despite his understandable reticence over the true purpose of his mission, Dukes describes his real-life adventures in gripping detail and might be reasonably credited with inventing what was to become a standard piece of tradecraft for the secret agent, as depicted in the movies. Dukes recalls, with some humour, placing incriminating evidence in a condom and hiding it in a lavatory cistern. "I wrote mostly at night, in minute handwriting on tracing paper, with a small caoutchouc latex bag about 4 inches in length, weighted with lead, ready at my side," he recalled. "In case of alarm, all my papers could be slipped into this bag and within 30 seconds be transferred to the bottom of the cistern of the water closet. I have seen pictures, carpets and bookshelves removed and everything turned topsy-turvy by diligent searchers, but it never occurred to anybody to thrust his hand into the water closet cistern. Michael Smith, editor of the Dialogue Espionage Classics, March 2012.